Welcome to part two of the tour. You should now be standing at point four. As you look around, you will see that almost nothing remains of the new church, and for this we have to thank Henry VIII and the English Reformation. For reasons that are too complex to explain fully in this guide, Henry saw the religious communities as a threat, and, perhaps more importantly, a source of easy wealth. He ordered them to be dissolved or closed, their wealth ransacked and their buildings destroyed. What happened at Denny sheds light on the real workings of this process and how far from any religious or political motivation it really was. The King's secretary, Thomas Cromwell, sent round commissioners in 1536 to assess the wealth of these houses and decide which ones should be closed. Perhaps due to the status of its abbess, Denny survived this initial purge, but 3 years later the commissioners returned. Their report told of how the nuns came out, with tears in their eyes, and begged to be dismissed. A chilling insight into the web of deceit and fear that shrouded the process. The nuns were sent away and the new church destroyed. But the first church was now living quarters and far too valuable to be knocked down, so it was sold to a speculator, making some persons a tidy profit. This happened all around East Anglia, and the Cromwell family was not averse to helping itself to the pickings, a possible extra justification for the subsequent execution of Thomas Cromwell. And so for the next 400 years, Denny Abbey became a farmhouse, owned by families, corporations, and businesses. This was not such a new departure, since the Abbey had always been the centre of a farming estate. It was just the status of the owners which changed. These owners included Thomas Hobson, the Cambridge innkeeper of Hobson's Choice fame, the City of London, and Chivers Fruit Company from nearby Histon. Although the inside of the building changed to create a more domestic feel, few major architectural alterations were made. Windows were modernised, doors knocked through, an impressive chimney built onto the south end of the transept, and the dormitory block demolished. But apart from that, the fabric of the building remained more or less the same. So that when in the 1960s the Ministry of Works removed much of the outside coating and inside panelling, there was no difficulty in recognising the features and layout of the original Abbey Church which lay behind. Please go inside the door to the next point of the tour, point five. You are now standing at the crossing point of the first church. In front of you is the main part of the nave, with the north transept to your right and the south transept to your left. In front, you may see behind a wall an anteroom with models of two Templars. Their clothes reflect their poverty, or certainly of those who lived here. When the order was closed down in 1308, each man was said to have had only a tunic, a clothes bag, and a bed in the communal dormitory to call his own. If you move into the north transept to your right, you will see the doorway which led into the dormitory, first of the Templars and later of the nuns. In the plaster beside this doorway, you may be able to see the mark of a banister from a previous staircase. The nuns, at least in theory, had to rise for the matin service at 2 a.m. and perhaps you can imagine them rubbing their eyes and maybe even grumbling a little as they came down the cold stairs and out through the archway into the aisle of the new church. If you move through to the south transept, the main feature is a magnificent Tudor farmhouse kitchen with an open fireplace large enough to roast an ox. The later iron cooking range is probably late 18th century, with a bread oven to the left, heated by the smaller perpetual oven below it, a sign of how kitchen furniture was becoming smaller over time. In the walls, there is evidence of original church features. A pillar, half hidden in the corner, is in a remarkable state of preservation, its scalloped capital a clue that it was put there by the Benedictines, and with traces of, probably, original paint remaining, due to it being bricked over during the 14th century and thus kept safe from natural weathering. In the corner to the right of the fireplace is a spiral staircase, which led to the second floor and above. If you carry along the wooden walkway, you can see some of the farmhouse interior decoration tacked onto the earlier walls. English Heritage adopted a policy of not restoring the building to any particular period in its history, but rather to peel back some of the layers to reveal traces of earlier use. This has resulted in the building being, on one level, a confusing mishmash of periods, but on the other, a fascinating source of investigation and discovery as the visitor tries to piece together and imagine all the different stages of its history. Now go back to the north transept and climb the stairs to the upper floor to get to point 6. You should now be standing on the wooden walkway at the exact centre of the crossing. Around you, you can see the tops of the four magnificent Norman archways that formed the structure of the original church. Directly in front, down the nave, you can see a flattened Tudor arch, suggesting that this was inserted when Denny became a farmhouse, and through it can be seen a more pointed Gothic arch from the time of the Countess. If you go through, you can see the clerestory windows of the first church on each side, and this gives an idea of how narrow it was. The paint on the walls is medieval and reminds us that later on these were the private quarters for the Countess and her guests, and so needed to be bright and cheerful. If you go back into the upper south transept, you can see the Countess of Pembroke's own bedroom. Its present, austere appearance is a far cry from the comfortable surroundings she would have enjoyed. The room would have been dominated by a four-poster bed with elaborate and luxurious hangings. There would have been plaster and paint on the walls and possibly tapestries. The floor would have been covered, perhaps with rush matting, and there would have been a roaring fire. There would also have been a chest and table and chair, and the right-hand doorway would have been a clothes cupboard. The left-hand doorway led to her own private garderobe. The window would have been in the back wall rather than the side, which would have been blocked by the church. It was filled in when the chimney was built. The beams in the long room that you can see through these doorways are 14th century, and they were strong enough for that room to hold balls as late as the 1920s. To continue the tour, go out of the abbey by the entrance you came in, across the site of the new church, through the doorway by the cottage, and across to the refectory to point 7. You are now standing in the refectory or dining room of the abbey, built by the Countess in the 14th century. The large painting on the wall gives an idea of how the dining room might have looked, and if you search, you can find the architectural details on which the painting was based. For example, the number and shape of the Gothic windows, the small doorway in the opposite wall, with the outline of the pulpit above it, and the magnificent tiled floor. At the far left end there would have been a kitchen. Considering there were only ever about 30 nuns, you can see that they lived in some degree of comfort. Food would have come from the surrounding fields and from the abbey's own fish ponds, which lie alongside the track leading to the site. If the refectory looks a bit like a barn, with its large facing doors, that is because after the dissolution it was used for just such a purpose. This saved it from demolition, and when archaeologists dug down through centuries of cow dung, they found the floor in a surprisingly good state of preservation. If you go outside, towards the right-hand end of the refectory wall, you can see the doorway the nuns used. It looks too small, until you notice the ground is banked up before it. This mound reveals that under your feet lie the remains of the ancillary buildings all abbeys were accustomed to have. The site has not yet been thoroughly excavated, and you can imagine that if you could roll back the top few feet of ground like a carpet, you would clearly see the outline of such structures. For now, we have to take the word, largely guesswork, of archaeologists who say that the space between the refectory and the stone wall you've just come through is the cloister, while the stone walls just emerging from the ground between the refectory and the cottage belong to a chapter house. The cream-coloured cottage that you see in front is more recent, but still interesting. It is one of perhaps three which were built at Denny in the 1860s to house farm workers and their families. It perhaps owes its existence to Prince Albert, the husband of Queen Victoria, who is appalled by the squalid conditions endured by agricultural labourers, and who personally designed and promoted model dwellings for their benefit. While this is not an exact copy of his design, it undoubtedly owes its existence to his influence, and perhaps reveals the philanthropy of the owner, or the difficulty of attracting labour at the time. It has been modernised and furnished to reflect the 1940s, but apart from electricity had probably changed little from the 19th century. It seems cramped, damp and gloomy to us now, and it is hard to imagine that it represented the height of luxury to those who lived in it first. This ends the audio tour, but not the end of things to see in the museum. Do not miss the Village Life shop, with its goods and packaging reminding us of the recent past, nor our display of farming equipment, which tells the story of the development of agriculture from the time of the agricultural revolution. Much of this is held in the stone barn, an uncommon example of a late 16th century barn, for most were made of wood, with its wonderful roof structure. The stone for this building, we can guess, came from the recently demolished Abbey Church. Also, make sure you see the displays of Fenland crafts, which give a fascinating insight into this fast disappearing culture. Thank you for your attention. We hope you have enjoyed this tour and that you will have a pleasant and interesting visit.